I'm Lucy Barkas, and this is the Leader X podcast, focusing on the future of work. In my book, Leader X, I share my 5 Mys methodology, a way to lead organization and teams. My legacy is all about what you want to create, the impact you want to have on your people, your customers, and ultimately the world around you. It's all about your purpose. It's the opportunity to dream, to vision, to strategize. But how do you do this when everything is so unpredictable and fast changing? In this series, I welcome futurists, people who hang out in possibilities of the future of work. I ask them about what's coming up. The goal is to inspire you, to challenge you, and to help you think bigger about your impact, your legacy. Leaders always start with the end in mind and then strategize, innovate, and find ways to make it a reality. The 5 Mys method will help you achieve it. So head to the website to sign up to the 3WH newsletter, where those who are serious about leadership now and in the future will get the tools, tips, and methods to be the leader they wish they'd always had. Coming up, why the younger generations won't respect you just because you've got the job title and what you need to get them on board. So today's guest is a really interesting leader. I found Michael Anderson after he wrote a book about remote leadership, and after reading his story, I knew he was the perfect guest for the Leader X podcast. Now, I'm going to be honest, he wasn't always a Leader X, but he is proof that you can become one. So in his early days, he spent his time in fast growth tech industry and lived the exciting high life that came with fast success. It's the kind of life you see plastered all over Instagram and looks like a dream. His life was hedonistic in some ways, partying hard, and soon the party didn't feel like so much fun anymore. So he embarked on a leadership journey for himself that led him to study spiritual leadership, which was, by his words, life-changing. Now he writes, speaks, and inspires others to lead from a centered place and a spiritual place and how to be successful. So let's hear from Michael and, how anyone can become a true leader. So welcome, Michael.
Hi, Lucy. It's always interesting hearing people give me my spoken audio, my intro. So I'm like, that was my life, wasn't it? So thanks. I'm happy to be here and share anything I can.
Excellent. So we've got about half an hour together. So I want this time. Now I mentioned your life, I think back in the day, if we'd have had Instagram back then, it would have been the picture perfect Instagram story, this role model of success, developing, traveling, partying hard. But it's not the life you have now. So tell us a little bit about what life was like then, how you got there and the journey that you're on now.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up, Lucy, because you're right. Externally, it looked like I had an amazing life. I grew up a programmer. I worked for a software company, climbed the corporate ladder to VP level, started my own business in software business in California. We had some success. And at that point, I'm in my mid-30s. I'm making a lot of money. I'm in the paper for our success, in the media for our success. And you're right, I'm 50 now, so that's 15 years ago, not so much Instagram. And from the outside, my life really looked great. I mean, I was dating models. I was like literally flying around the world and partying everywhere. I had a very active social life in that. But on the inside, I had a lot of chaos, And I could speak for hours. I'll try to sum it up, but I felt like a fraud. I'm driven, I'm intelligent, and I understand business. But when I started my business, there was a gap in the marketplace and we had some really quick success. And all of a sudden I'm running a multi-million dollar business in just a really, really short time. I have staff. I didn't understand leadership. I thought leadership was, I would just get a bunch of tasks and give them out to everybody. And if I didn't get them done as fast or as well as I thought, I would just get frustrated and angry. And I didn't I had substance abuse issues, alcohol and hard drugs. And I just had this massive, massive stress on me. Stress was like this huge ball on me. Every day I would get up, I'd have to fake my way through it because I felt like an imposter. I'm 34, 35. Most of the people in my company were older than me. We did enterprise software, accounting, manufacturing software. So everybody was like CPAs and all these really smart people worked for me. And I was afraid that they would find out that I didn't really know what I was doing with all this growth, and nothing could prepare you for running a business. And I was just, I had this massive self-doubt and massive imposter syndrome and fraud guilt, even though I was having success. And it was weird because I would have these goals and I would get to these goals, but I would never be happy. And it just was like a crazy downward spiral. I realized I had to do something, or I was literally going to end up dead because the substance abuse got worse. The pressure was mounting. My lack of leadership was starting to really affect things. Customers were leaving. People were leaving. I had a business partner. He owned a small part of my business because he was a key employee. We got into an argument, and then he ended up assaulting me in our office.
Wow.
I got so many stories to tell, Lucy. We don't got time. It's so dramatic. You got to wait for the Netflix special if you want to see the thing.
Or maybe that's one of the things for your future.
maybe. And if anybody wants, I got a YouTube channel that I talk about in more detail about that and things. But basically, long story short, as I was a mess, I had to change personally, professionally, because I wasn't a good leader. I was a good manager and business person, but people were looking for me for culture and a vision, which I understood in concept, but I just didn't know how to do. And luckily, around those times, I joined the Entrepreneurs Organization, which is a group of worldwide business owners. And I met two of the guys in there. They just had a real calmness about them. And that's what, oh my God, calmness. I couldn't even dream about having calmness because I had ADD. Everything would go so quickly. And I was just, anyway, my life was just seemed like one big massive fast movie, crazy movie that I had no control over. And I got to know them, and they had this master's degree in spiritual psychology up in a couple hours away from me. And I didn't really know what it was, spiritual psychology, what the heck is that? But I know I never did any self-development or had any spirituality. And I tried pretty much everything else, and I'm still a mess. So I figured, what the heck? I'm going to give this a try. So I basically signed up for this master's program I went to the website. I'm like, I'm going to give it a try. I got to do something. And it was really life-changing. When I talk about spiritual psychology, it's nothing to do with religion, but it's a very compassionate view of psychology. And we really look inwards on ourselves before we look, you know, just like leadership in this psychology, we really work on ourselves before we try to extend that to other people. And I think that's a good leadership lesson, because oftentimes people, and I know we talked about this, Lucy, people come to us because they want like their team to change, but we need to change that. They need to change sometimes with our guidance first. So, I went back for 2 more years. So I spent 4 years looking in all these crazy parts of myself that I didn't really want to look in because I knew what I might or might not find. And, cleared a lot of that. This is a scientific word. Cleared a lot of that crap out, and I believe I'm much better off for it. And it changed my personal life 180 degrees. You know, I have that calmness. I have that peace. I have that joy that I was always searching for. And when I started applying what I learned there to my businesses, we really started to thrive because I was making connections with my employees. We really were coming from a place of service, of doing good for the community, giving back to the community, creating great value for our clients. That translated into real life success. We were on the Inc. 5000 list a couple of years in a row. We were voted number one best place to work. I won Social Entrepreneur of the Year, and that was externally, but inside I was finally having fun.
And you were enjoying it, and you were feeling it.
I know, I was enjoying it. I got the stress. I'm a competitor and I take on a lot of responsibility. So I'm not saying there's not stress, but I had tools to deal with the stress, and it wasn't that debilitating stress. It's like any stress. It was a fun stress, pushing me forward, taking the responsibility. Yeah. So it's like, even though, you know, I'm not going to say I don't have stress. I always have stress, but it's
almost like a positive stress that you choose because you've got this bigger purpose or this bigger goal. You feel connected to something in some way.
Exactly. It's pushing me forward. It's a forward moving stress. It wasn't just bringing me down.
It's really interesting because as you were talking about meeting these really calm, centered people, when I was in my 20s, I used to see these older, wiser, and I say older, wiser, they're probably only in their 40s, but to me, they were older and wiser, but they had this really sense of groundedness. And I used to really try and avoid them because it was almost like it projected in me all the chaos and the insecurities and everything that I had within. And it was only when I then started my coach training, where again, I had to work out my own crap, you know, before you're a coach, that you have to, you know, do it, the work on yourself. And only then when I was like, ah, I get it now. This is how it's supposed to be. So any leader or any human being that starts, you know, professing any of these, you know, guru kind of stuff, they have to have done the work themselves. And I find it fascinating that you went from zero to then doing this, you know, 4-year study and came out the same person, but the real Michael, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to clarify, it was about a 6 to 10 year journey.
Oh, wow. So, okay.
You know, that's the thing. I went through this 2-year master's program, did a ton of work, and it's expensive and a time commitment. And then I get to the end. I was hoping I'd be fixed by then, but you know, they were just giving me the tools for the next, you know, rest of my life, but it's all good. And after spending 25 years in accounting software, I know what everybody out there is thinking, accounting software, there's nothing more sexy in the world than you mix accounting.
Not very spiritual.
Yeah. It's like, wow. I love my career, but a couple of business owners in California saw the changes in myself and my business. And they said, hey, Mike, maybe, you know, can you help me out? And I really enjoyed that. And so I sold, at one point I had 3 businesses. I sold 2 of them. I still own a small one, but now I really focus on leadership mindset because I have a psychology background, the spiritual background, and now and a neuroscience certificate. And I really enjoy the mindset because to me, you know, there's a lot to leadership and there's management's part of leadership, but I really like the mindset things because that's was the biggest change for me. And that's to me really fun. I guess it's the programming, what makes everybody tick. And so what can we do? And, you know, Stanford's brought me to work with their startup ecosystem, Uber, Microsoft, Salesforce have all brought me in. And I just, cause I know how hard leadership was for me making that shift from tactical to strategic, from, you know, from feeling like a fraud and really owning my self-worth and having that confidence and that resilience. And I just try to help other leaders make some of those changes themselves.
Now, when I picked up your book about, you know, high performance, remote leadership, I was really quite not surprised, let's say, that actually the first half of the book is really about the self, the human leadership, and, you know, the tactics of doing remote comes later. And it got me really reflecting and, you know, the words around, you know, connection and humanity. Now, some of my favorite business gurus or my life gurus, they're American and they're very open about talking about their spirituality or their faith. And here in the UK, people don't talk about that. I mean, we're actually taught you don't talk about, you know, spirituality and religion. You don't talk politics and you don't talk money. You're taught that from a very young age. And so going out there and starting to connect with people about being human, being kind, being compassionate, sometimes it feels like, you know, a harder challenge. So how have you found that step into talking just about business stuff to actually talking about more human leadership, the real deeper stuff? Has it been well received? Are you still finding a lot of naysayers?
Yeah, it's interesting because I know we're here talking about the future of work. And it's funny because people sometimes like, what's the future of leadership? I'm like, look, leadership's basically the same now as it's been like 10,000 years ago. I mean, yeah, they didn't have Zoom and everything. And they're like all these new things about conscious leadership and empathetic community. There's great leaders like 10,000 years ago that really like to connect to whoever they were leading. I mean, this is not like things we've come up with. Maybe it's a little bit more formalized. Maybe there's more books around it. Maybe there's some studies around it. But to me, you know, treating people with empathy and respect is a timeless thing. Granted, I think that there's sometimes more, again, you know, studies and processes to it nowadays. But I think, though, I love the younger generation. And I hate to say I'm an old guy and there's the young people, but a lot of people my age and even a little bit older, they like complain about this younger generation. But I think they're amazing because the younger generation is like, look, I want to be, you know, I want to be respected. I want to be empowered. I'm like, well, we should be doing that as leaders. And some of the old people are like, they don't do what they say. Well, it's because you're saying stupid stuff, you know? So, you know, earn their respect. Don't think they're going to, you know, pay them X number of dollars an hour and then give them stupid stuff to do. Of course, you're not going to want to do that. You got to. And so I think that there's more of an onus on leaders to show up more authentic, that people, you know, consumers are voting with their wallets. Employees are voting with the fact that they can go somewhere else and be treated better. So I think, and we were talking actually on a previous conversation, Lucy, about how leaders have to really be, poor leadership is getting, what do we call it, magnified through the pandemic?
Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, I was sharing with you that I'd were coaching a CEO who was just really, really frustrated because everyone's saying, you know, that it's a micromanagement culture. And they're like, it's not, it's nothing like that. And then when you start unpacking the behaviors, actually, these behaviors were there before the pandemic. And then during this whole remote working where the interactions are very much smaller and the meetings were literally just about, what are you doing? Why haven't you done that? And then the email chains that go on the back of it, it's all that negative, almost like a big brother is watching you. Now they're getting back together again, even if it's just, you know, a couple of days a week, it's really magnified these really poor behaviors. And it just comes back to, do you trust your people? You've hired these people to do a job. Why are you getting in their way? How are you talking to them? If somebody sent you that email or spoke to you that way, how would it make you feel? And throwing that almost that mirror back to them really made them stop in their tracks. And like, actually, no, I wouldn't like it. So why do I think it's okay to do that to other people? And so, yeah, the pandemic really has created this magnifying glass. And, you know, even things like the lower paid jobs, things like, you know, in hospitality and some of the lower end pay roles, people are saying, I don't want to do that anymore. It's low pay. I'm treated like rubbish. I'm expected to work all these hours and drop everything just to come running. And what am I getting in return? So it's really everything. It almost feels like the house of cards has fallen down. And now we're starting to rise. And I hope that people, leaders, listen to this podcast and realize that there is another way. The LeaderX podcast has an amazing back catalogue, so hit that subscribe button and check out previous episodes with award-winning authors like Jonathan Hemus and Greg Orme. So why don't you talk to us a little bit about how you see that other way being, whether it's the remote stuff, the hybrid stuff, how do you see leaders being in the future?
And well, now? It's interesting. Actually, yesterday I did a masterclass, and if anybody wants it, I'll have it for sale soon too. And it's basically, and it's funny. First of all, I called it Return to Work, and I got you and somebody else like, I don't know if you want to call it that because somebody else
was
working for the last year and a half. I'm like, yeah, that's right. And I did a little poll at the beginning and they want to. And so it's the and what I want to talk about in the course is to do a roadmap. Now that lockdown's easing, what do you have to do as an organization to create a strategy about what your next step is? Because it may not be return to the office because people voted return to the office, but are people returning to the office? Because a lot of people are going hybrid or virtual. So maybe it's workplace reset, but I guess that's for a longer conversation. But basically, I've talked to one business owner and two employees that their company is making them come back to the office and not having any virtual or hybrid allowances. People are not happy. And I get it. You know, the one guy has an hour plus commute into London and he's like, the other lady I talked to, and she, you know, she has up to a 2 hour. And she's like, look, I've been having dinner with my kids every day. I really like that. And that's like, I'll come in a little bit, but I should come in 5 days a week. And I think that the companies that are going to say everybody's coming back to the office 5 days a week are going to have a real talent drain because it's easier to switch. There's a skills gap and a skills shortage. And to me, this is like, I'm a big capitalism and free market fan. This is the free market speaking.
Yeah.
If you don't, this is, it's supply and demand, right? If you don't give this to me, I'm going to go and maybe I'll make $5,000 less a year, but
I'll be happy.
Yeah, I'll be happy, right? And because they've shown, I've been doing a lot of research on this lately, that hey, when you can live where you want and you spend more time with your family, you're happier, and then you work more, and that it, and you know, you're not spending money on commuting, you're not spending money on eating lunch out every day, you're not spending money on you know, there's a carbon footprint. There's a lot there.
And one of the really interesting things that I've been having discussions with recently is the whole premise of Lead X, that almost like the tagline is work anytime, any place, anywhere. It's true flexibility. And then I'm hearing leaders saying, yeah, we're going to be offering flexibility. We want you in the office 3 days a week. And the other 2 days you can do what you want to do. I'm like, no, you're still mandating. That's not what flexible working is. Flexible working is giving people the choice. And some people are great. I'm a better morning person. And by 3 o'clock, that's it. I log off because I want to do things with, you know, my friends, my family. I like to read my books, potter in the garden. But from 7 a.m., I am prolific. My ex-husband, one of the reasons he's now my ex-husband, he was a night owl. He could stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning and then stay in bed all morning. And actually, that was fine for him. But yeah, together it wasn't going to work. But that's what people are generally like. And some people like to work a little bit in the evening, a little bit in the morning, and then go for a run at lunchtime. That's what flexible working looks like, giving people the choice, not thinking, right, we're going to do a 4 day week or a 3 day week. You're so close, but you're still not getting it. And that's one of the things that I find very frustrating. So that's why you need to listen to your people, because if you don't, they are going to leave.
Yeah, I do see that. And I also think that you need to put in some structure for them. So
these boundaries, yeah.
You know, I can see bringing people in for 1 or 2 days a week, and so that they do have that face-to-face. Because even if you're fully virtual, because, you know, we had a hybrid company and we won number one best place to work. And this is 15 years ago. We would have certain hours that you have to be there because people need to collaborate. So if you have morning people and evening people, that, you know, they got to work on projects together. So
yeah, 10 till 2, that might work. Yeah.
And every quarter we brought everybody in. We flew everybody in because, you know, to us, we worked on big multi-million dollar projects. So we needed people to know and trust each other. So I think you got to work, you got to work backwards from, you know, the nature of work, the age of your employees. The younger people have a real problem with full virtual because they often rely on work for social interactions. Because when you're older, you have your family, you have your friends, you have the people in the neighborhood. But, you know, when you're earlier in your career, and that's what the statistics say, that younger people want to come into the office. Yeah. Because they enjoy that. And I get it.
And their home lives, you know, some of them are just renting one room or a tiny little apartment without any garden space. And also they need to learn. So how did we learn? We learned by watching other people, or, you know, being mentored or observing or learning what it was like to be in a meeting. So that proximity actually really does matter early on in your career, I think.
Yeah. And they say mentoring is one of the hardest things. You know, I love virtual. I love hybrid. I love to teach people how to get everything. But I think that mentoring, that accidental mentoring, is one of the harder things to get because you are in a silo. And we can do cross collaboration, virtual, but you know, you have to really, really be intentional about, for example, mentoring. So, you know, you have to talk, Mike, you have to talk to your mentor, Lucy, once a week for half an hour. You have to do that. So you really got to put those structures in, because everything you can do on the office, you can do virtually or hybrid, but you need to really structure those. And I know I'm a bit analytical, but I really believe in putting them, you know, Michael, you have to meet with Lucy every week for half an hour. Okay, put it in your calendar.
And those things like people say, oh, they miss those water cooler conversations. Well, you can have those virtually. You just have to make it conscious that, oh, we're going to meet at this time and we're going to have a discussion, just a chat, no agenda. We're just going to have a chat. So yes, it feels contrived, but it's still the same energy once you get in the space. But one of the things that you were saying about, you know, bringing people back into the office or that collaborative space, I think one of the things that I'm seeing great leaders doing are really questioning about what is the purpose, what is the work that we will do when we do come together, and then maybe redesigning the workspaces. And it was just really interesting that a couple of weeks ago I signed up for a co-working space because, you know, I've been working on my own for so long. And all of those other people in that great, vibrant area that I was working with, I didn't know any of them. But actually, by the end of the first morning, I knew their names and we had energy and we'd had little chats. And so it was still a way to connect. And as I had the conversations, it was sparking off loads of imagination and curiosity within me. And so I think that's a really great way to bring people together, to say, look, the purpose of us coming in on every Wednesday is so that we have those chats, we do those collaborative meetings, we do those brainstorming things, but answering your emails, that can be done anywhere. You do that on another day. So I think that's where that structure needs to come from. Like if you're at home, you're doing this kind of work. If you're in the office, we're doing this kind of work. Would you subscribe to something like that? You know, defining what does in the workplace work look like?
Yeah, you know, that's a great thing to bring up. I never thought of that. But yes, you want to make sure that people, yeah, you don't come all the way into London and sit in a corner and do your emails and talk to clients all day on the phone. And you know, there's so many questions that companies are going to have to answer. They're going to have to answer, like, what is a physical space look like? Because I hate open office plans. I'm introverted. And so if I'm working and anybody makes noise, I'm like, oh, what are they making this noise for? And so, but then again, you know, I also understand the collaborative type thing. So, you know, yeah, what does that look like? You got vaccines is a huge issue. We could probably spark off some controversy talking about vaccines. Like, do you know, there's companies that are saying no jab, no jobs. You know, if you don't have a vaccine, you're fired. Others are like, don't ask, don't tell. So we don't really care. But some people are really freaked out.
Yeah.
If they're vaccinated, they don't want to be around other people vaccinated, which I respect. You know, and so it's you got to be careful. You can make a bad choice around something like that and have real workplace problems.
Again, people. I think it's for the leaders, not assuming that you know all of the answers. You go out and you ask your people, how are you feeling around this? I saw one great company and they've actually changed the color of the lanyards. So one of the lanyards, let's say it's blue, is to say, I'm completely fine. Come and sit next to me. Let's have a chat. Another one says, actually, I'm a little bit anxious. And the other one is, actually, respect the 2 meter distance, please, and wear your face mask. And so you don't have to have the conversation. You just wear the lanyard to say, this is where I'm at. And I thought, well, you know, it might work for you. It might not. But I just thought that's a really great visual way to say, we're listening. We get where you are. And please respect one another.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you know what? I think leaders have to realize is you don't just have to listen. You have to tell people you listen. And so many leaders are like, yeah, we got the survey, we got this, and then we made this decision. I'm like, did you tell them you made that decision based on the survey? They're like, we skipped that spot, because people don't want to be listened to. They want to know that they're listened to.
Yeah.
So leaders, when you get a survey and you make a decision, make sure you tell people the decision you made and why, because 99% they're going to be okay with it if they know, even if you didn't go their way, you can say, hey, I know people wanted to work from home all the time, so we're going to work from home 3 or 4 days a week, but we need you in. And so we're meeting you halfway because we really need it. And this is why. People would be like, okay, I can see that, you know? And so it's just, don't be afraid to really talk through, because a lot of times people, because if you don't give them reasons, they're going to make up their own reasons, which are probably going to not go in your favor. And probably you just get gossiped about.
And I don't know whether you find this, but when you actually have conversations and you actively listen, people are a lot more reasonable than we give them credit for.
Totally.
You know, and I'm the same. You know, if somebody asks me, then I'll willingly volunteer and put my hand up. If somebody tells me, it's almost like the obstinate teenager within me just wants to stick my middle finger up and do the opposite. People are reasonable if you're reasonable with them.
Exactly. And so when you're making these big decisions, like returning to work or returning to the, sorry.
I know, I've got that phrase in my head now.
Doing whatever you're doing, go slow. Have a committee, have a process. This is one of the biggest strategic decisions you're going to probably make in maybe the next 5 or 10 years, is over the next couple months, what the future looks like. And it's a massively emotionally one for your employees, because they're like, well, you know, can I stay? You know, my husband and I want to buy a house in, you know, Portugal. Are we going to be able to do that? Or, you know, in Devon, and that's the countryside in the UK, I found out recently. But, you know, and so, you know, a lot of people have their life decisions on hold, waiting for you, the leader or the company, to tell them what's going to roll out. And even if you say, you know what, we don't even know, we're going to make it in 6 months, but here's going to be the interim thing. At least they're like, hey, you're working on it and you know about it. So, you know, no communication is the worst communication. You know, I'm a big believer in frequent small communication. It was like, nothing's happened in the last couple of weeks. It's still on our radar, but you know, we just don't have enough info. People are like, all right.
I think that's really powerful about what you just said there about, you know, if things are on hold or if they don't have the answers, because I think that's part of that human leadership is also being able to say, I don't know the answer yet. I'm not going to try and blag it and try and pretend I know all the answers. Actually, I'm still thinking about this. Just give me a little bit of time. And I think that takes a lot of courage for a leader to be able to say, I don't know. But people respond so much, well, with more trust and loyalty when you say that.
I agree, right? Because the leader's thought process is, I don't have anything to say, so I don't want to say it. And they're like, I don't want to look like an idiot, or I don't need to because nothing's changed. So I think there's a lot of probably a lot of that inner chatter going on that I absolutely agree. It's like, just take that next step to let everybody know that it's still on the radar.
So tell me, what's next for you? What are you up to in the world?
Relax a little bit. I have a bunch of staycations planned in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to work on my next book's going to be on leadership mindset specifically, because that's the stuff that I've been, you know, I talk and teach a lot about, but I want to put a book around it just to give it some more specificity.
Easy for you to say. Do you enjoy the writing? Do you enjoy the writing process?
No, not at all.
I hated it too.
And I'm writing thin books from now on. I'm not writing thick books. I'm just getting, you know, putting some important stuff out and getting them out. So, you know, I just, that's my learn the hard way. So I'm just, you know, going to keep doing what I'm doing and relax the next couple of months and hopefully work on a book when I'm chilling out.
And then you've got your programs that you're launching. Tell me a little bit about those.
Yeah, I do. I do leadership masterminds, leadership mindset masterminds. They're about 3 months long, and they are really a deep dive. And it's a good format because it's every 2 weeks you get together with a cohort, and we dig into some skills. We do some small group work, and then you go out and do it for a couple of weeks, and then you get back and we debrief, and then you learn new skills. And they go on for about three and a half months. It's really fun for me and the leaders. It really moves them from tactical to strategic. Really, they gain that self-worth, that leadership presence. And I really enjoy that because people get really connected to each other and they support each other. And so it's really a fun program. So I'll be doing that in the second half of 2021.
And what about when the world opens up and you can actually get together? Will you be running those in person in the room?
Yeah, you know, I think I like doing them the way they are, but I am going to start doing some retreats. And maybe, Lucy, maybe this won't we do a retreat together for
wouldn't that be amazing? Yes.
Yeah, we'll take everybody. I work with a lady in Canary Islands. We could do something on the south of England. Maybe we talk about that coming up.
And you know what? Well, I'm a scout leader in my hobby in my spare time, so I'll get them going on these lovely walks and pushing challenging them a little bit. So mind, body, and soul. That'd be amazing. Yeah, let's talk. That'll be another podcast. Launching what we're up to. But I think retreats are so powerful because actually, there's something about when you pack your suitcase. You get on the train or get in the car and you head to a destination, you're mentally already preparing yourself. And then you're just focusing on this one topic or this one change. Whereas in work, obviously, you're juggling this email and this problem and actually going away, whether it's for a week or a weekend, and just focusing on one core topic is so powerful.
Yeah. So people out there have not been on a retreat, you know, whether it's, you know, something Lucy and I do together or whoever else, it literally can be life-changing because like you said, Lucy, when you take yourself out of the hustle and bustle of your work or your house, I just talked to a lady today about it. She got two kids and two twin 9-year-old boys and a husband and you know, she's on all the time, you know, between kids and she got a high powered, somewhat like VP role in project management technology. So, and it's great to see people because, you know, they get there, they're like on their phone, put your phone away. And after a day or two, there's like, Oh, there's the rest of the world. And then, you know, your scout leader, we could bring him outside, going all they do, having light fires and stuff like that. That'd be fun.
Mate, well, yeah, we'll definitely have the conversation because I'm excited already and I need a break. So there you go. So just tell the audience, where can they find more about you? Where do you tend to hang out and publish your work?
Yeah, so R. Michael Anderson is my website. R is for Robert. Don't tell anybody. rmichaelanderson.com. And I have a Facebook group that I do short little weekly trainings every week. There's a bunch of tools and tips and tricks like that. So get on there, drop me an email or something, or on Facebook, you can do it. My book, sorry about the audio, is out. So the Leading in the Next Normal, and it's a guide to virtual teams, agility, leading through change. Quick read too, and an audio books out there. And if I can help anybody, you know, especially if you're going through a tough time from a personal standpoint as a leader, I'm, you know, we didn't talk that much about the spiritual psychology, but if there's anybody out there really wanting to know what's next in their life, their purpose, and really want to explore really to the deeper levels, I have a master's in spiritual psychology. I'm not a trained counselor because I didn't go for that certification, but I'm one of only 150 soul-centered coaches in the world. And so we really bring in some of the spirituality, which is an amazing, powerful thing. So they're always welcome. People are always welcome to reach out to me.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for taking the time. And I'm sure we'll be talking again on another episode in the future. So thank you, Michael.
Thanks so much for having me, Lucy.
So that's another episode done. Don't forget to buy the book, Leader X, subscribe to the podcast and sign up to the newsletter at www.3wh.uk.com. That's the number 3 in the letters W and H. And now it's time for you to step up, take control and lead with impact. Tune in next time for another great guest. Bye.